Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Isabella Rossellini, actress, model, and filmmaker, daughter of actress Ingrid Bergman and filmmaker Roberto Rossellini, spent years on the world's most beautiful lists, most sexy lists. She's no stranger to love, showmanship, or the dance of the sexes. Now she's taken her wise and funny eye to sex in the animal kingdom. Bees, worms, starfish. She calls her short film series Green Porno. It is literally wild. This hour on Point, we talk with model, film star, director, and environmental activist Isabella Rossellini. Joining me now from Southampton, New York, is Isabella Rossellini. She's an actress, model, filmmaker, screenwriter, and author. Huge cover girl for years. Longtime face of Lancôme Cosmetics. She appeared in many movies. She has Blue Velvet, Big Night, Immortal Beloved, and more. You may have seen her as Alec Baldwin's ex on 30 Rock. Her new film short series on the Sundance Channel about sex in nature is called Green Porno. She's got a book out with collections of images from the same series. You can see videos of Green Porno at our website, onpointradio.org. Isabella Rossellini, great to have you with us.
Hello. It's great to be here. Thank you.
It's really something, I have to say. You never know where life is going to go. And I think back to all the images we have seen of you. I never in my life imagined I'd one day be talking with you, as the Associated Press now calls you the world's most prominent porn artist specializing in the lusty behavior of bugs, barnacles, shrimp, and starfish. Oh, my goodness. What took you to this project, madam?
I was always interested in animal, and mostly in animal behavior, which includes sex, but it wasn't exclusively about sex.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, no, I wasn't particularly interested in sex. I don't know what you imply. But no, I mean, I am interested in biology,
yes,
and I took courses all my life, and I liked it. Robert Redford, who is heading the Sundance Institute Film Festival, a television channel, was intrigued. You know, he has always pushed the boundary of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. He was very prominent in the independent film reaching the distribution that they have. And Robert Redford thought that the internet could be a new outlet for short films, because short films fell out of the natural way of being distributed, you know, you say the outlet out there.
Of the big theaters.
Of the big theaters, mm-hmm. but even on television.
Mm-hmm.
On television,
yes,
the shortest format is half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So he allocated some experimental money to make short films, and I was one of the artists contacted to make series, 2 minutes long, of short films. And he said if they were about the environment, he was more inclined to allocate the money because he's very interested in the environment. So I came back with the idea of a series of films, comical films, about the sex life of animals that we all know, you know, flies, starfish, shrimps, because I know people don't know how they mate, or maybe most people don't know or don't think about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought he could create both a comical series and also, on the other hand, a reaction. Oh, I didn't know that about that animal.
So
that's how it started.
Well, I wish you'd paint a little picture of how they're delivered here. I mean, you're not only conceptualizing and co-directing these. You're in them. You're in costume. You're enacting as you narrate these scenes. But give us a sense of the visuals in your two-minute shorts here. It's a very kind of basic colors, almost a child's scrapbook look.
Yes, the reason why it looks like very colorful and almost like a child little theater, it was because we had to address the fact that a lot of film that could be shown in the internet are also shown mobile, and mobile have very small screens. So we reviewed several films, and we saw that animation, if you look at Walt Disney, it looks really good on big screen, on television, and small screen. But if you look at a film like Apocalypse Now or Lawrence of Arabia in your telephone, you wouldn't see it. Mm-hmm. So that established the aesthetic of my films. Then the budget being experimental and varied little, I thought, okay, let's make every paper costumes, because they're just cheap.
Right.
And also, I thought it would add to the comicity to have something that it looks like made at home, a costume made at home, and then talking about sex. The contrast would add to the comical effect of the films.
You call it green porno. It's not really porno, except that it's tightly focused on reproduction. It has a sense of humor and a kind of sense of you're making drama in a way around these. I have to salute. I mean, you come across as, they're surreal. They're sort of bizarre. I'm having a little trouble picturing them on cell phones. I don't know, commuters on their way to the city watching them, but maybe so. But you've got this sense of wisdom, of ease, of daring, of very arch and wonderful humor. Maybe we should listen to one to give our listeners a sense of what we're up to here. Isabella Rossellini is with us, and in her new season of Green Porno, she's exploring the sex habits of, this time, the deep sea, creatures like anchovies and elephant seals and shrimp. In this video, our sultry hostess, in her paper costume, trolls the waters as a randy male squid.
If I were a calamari, I would be a squid, and everyone would want to eat me. I would squirt black ink from my anus so that I can disappear and propel myself off. By luminescent effects and by changing shape, I can communicate. I can say, be careful. I can say, I love you with my whole three hearts. I would give the most passionate 20 arm embrace. 20. 18. Two are not arms, if you know what I mean. I would slip my spermatophore, a package full of sperm, into her spermateca.
Isabella Rossellini in...
Now, all these words are scientifically correct.
Yes, but of course.
Spermateca and spermatophore.
Yes. Absolutely. And there you are, fully in costume, embracing all the... equipment required for these undertakings?
Yeah, because every little film starts with a close-up of me saying,
yeah,
if I were, and yeah, then I transform myself with this paper costume, and then I tell how they mate. And the diversity of how animals reproduce is incredible and funny and scandalous.
I'm trying to get a little further inside your mind as you do this. I mean, you've got such a unique background. And here you are. I'm looking at the book version here of Green Porno. You're right on the cover. Absolutely beautiful. Your mother, Ingrid Bergman's face, very much and famously so, alive in your own. But in these films, you're anything but, a diva about how you're presented. You're fully a woman of your age in ridiculous costumes, doing ridiculous things, putting on papier-mâché noses and all the rest. Is that what are you thinking when you do it? Is this the fun of theater?
Yes, it is the fun of theater. Mm-hmm. An actress that would do that, I mean, I'm asked by Lancôme to portray a beautiful woman, an elegant woman. I will do that. But then, you play on another film and you have to be a battered woman, like in Blue Velvet,
sure,
or you have to play a housewife. So you have to adapt. I mean, and you have to portray that. So these are comical films,
yes,
and they are. So I wasn't particularly thinking to sell cosmetic with it.
Right.
I'm an actress.
Absolutely, but you still, don't leave me dangling entirely here. You do have a certain kind of courage or ease with going into unusual films, and once again in Green Porno, I think that's on display, and I wonder where that comes from.
I don't know where it comes from. I don't find them strange. I mean, I find them comical and hopefully informative and amusing. And it was an experiment. I mean, you might say
it's
that I done a lot of experimental films, but that probably comes of the fact that my father was the experimental film by excellence. My father, Roberto Rossellini, started a movement called Neorealism after the war that was incredibly influential in filmmaking because he brought reality to film. Film came of the tradition of magicians, so it was always spectacular. It was always entertaining. It was always above the lines. So he brought it back into a reality that still today you see a lot of films trying to capture the reality. So that was my father, and he was incredible. And he was at the time, in the late 40s, considered experimental filmmaker. So maybe the familiarity that I have with experimenting, or what you see as my easiness of not just being stereotyped and just do the same thing over and over again, might come from that.
I salute you. It's a wonderful kind of freedom of mind, and it seems so wonderfully grounded.
But isn't it what we're all trying to do, to have freedom of mind? And
well, you know, many people say that.
Trying to stretch.
Yeah, many people say that, but as you must know, not nearly as many do it or have it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
We're talking this hour with Isabella Rossellini about her new project, Green Porno. It's all about sex in the animal kingdom. It's wild and crazy and a lot of fun, kind of surreal versions. She's right in the middle in paper costume enacting. You can join the conversation. Have you followed Isabella Rossellini on the cover of Vogue, on the big screen in Blue Velvet, and Big Night in 30 Rock? We'll go out with a little music from This Is Your Day from the 1985 film White Knight, starring Mikhail Baryshnikov. She was right there in the middle of the film. She's with us today. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Isabella Rossellini, famous early on in her film career for her role in David Lynch's surreal, dark Blue Velvet. There's a big moment for her character, lounge singer Dorothy Valens, when she's performing the movie's namesake song for a rapt crowd. Let's listen.
She
Blue Velvet, 1986, Isabella Rossellini right there in the middle of David Lynch's big film. Isabella Rossellini, we have callers for you, and they've got insects to ask about. Carlos in Weston, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Isabella Rossellini.
Hello. I'm not sure if you can hear me because I'm on my way to school.
No problem. We hear you.
We can hear you,
to share that there's a species of beetle. Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, there's a species of beetles called the Hercules beetle. And it comes in, the males come in two forms. One form is very large Hercules males, and the other one it's dwarf, tiny little Hercules male beetles. So the funny, interesting thing about this, and I wonder if Isabel has run into this example, is that while the big Hercules males are fighting each other in order to gain the privileged position to mate with the female, the dwarf beetles are just waiting for the moment to mate with the female, and they often find it, and that's the reason why the dwarf males are sticking around still.
So this is a
funny example that I wonder if she has been able to film.
And I didn't know about this beetle, but I knew it about cuttlefish, and I wish I'd made a little episode of it. Apparently, some cuttlefish, some male young weaker, not the dominant male cuttlefish, transform themselves and to make themselves look like female, so they can approach female and mate with them without without stimulating the dominant male to attack them. And now that we have DNA testing, we see that the father, the fittest of the male is generally the one that is fathered a lot of the babies. But we see that a lot of the sneaky males are also fathered. So it's very interesting from an evolutionary standpoint, because we always believed that it was the dominant that was able to be the father. But we see that other strategy called the sneaky male strategy are also successful.
Carlos, I'm so glad for your call. You've caught just exactly the spirit of these films. Look, there's these wild and sort of fascinating aspects of, you know, the birds and the bees and how it all gets done. Isabella, what's been your favorite so far, or your favorites?
To me, it was important to find animals that we all knew, because I know I've been terribly frustrating reading scientific book when an animal behavior is, you know, fascinating, but I couldn't picture the animal,
right,
because
what is
it's
that?
A beetle in the Amazon, right? So, and then second, the diversity on reproduction, so that my little series of 18 films will all have different ways, so that you could see how varied nature it is and how smart all the strategies are.
Let's get another bit from Green Porno. This is back in the first season. You're in your third season now. With Isabella Rossellini, we got to peek at the secret sex lives of insects there. Here in this clip, we have a swarm of lazy male drone bees loafing around. She's right in the middle of this. They're waiting for their one chance to get lucky.
If I were a male bee, I wouldn't have a father, and I will be called a drone. I would have many brothers, and we would do nothing, just waiting to have sex. A female, ready to mate. Sex! And we rather would fight! I'm the strongest. I would fly after her. I would mate her in flight. It's our nuptial flight. But pulling out from her, my penis would break off. It would get stuck in her vagina like a cork in a bottle. But he would prevent other males from mating with her. She will be queen. She would start a new colony with my babies. But I would die. Without my penis, I would bleed to death.
Ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you've heard it here first. Isabella Rossellini in Green Porno with a B there. And she is in full kind of over-the-top dramatic presentation thereof. Anita in Barnstable, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Anita.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Hi. First, I wanted to tell Isabella that you're doing a great job. I've watched Green Porno. I think it's awesome. They're short, they're sweet, they tell a lot, and they're so much fun to watch. But my question has to do with screen actors in general. You find more in the recent, 3 years, that screen actors are going to TV and Internet to show their skills. Why do you think that is?
Isabella.
I think that the Internet has opened up new possibilities. There are, you know, for the moment, a great limit of the Internet is that there is not a financial structure. You know, you can put your film out there and it can be seen by millions of people, but it's for free. So how do you create an industry so that you can recuperate the money you invested and make more films? So this is one of the biggest problems that the Internet has. But it has opened up a direct communication between the actors and their public. It has allowed a new form of experimentation of films, short version, so you don't have to, you know, try to fundraise for $3, $4, $5 million, as one short 2-hour film will cost inevitably. I think it has opened up a lot of doors, and then you see the expression of a lot of talent. Now, I think the next step is to find business models so that it's not just this incredible distributing machine and, you know, democratization, if you want, of the art form, but somewhat the artists have to be paid, because otherwise how they continue their art. So that's a big problem in the Internet.
Are you just as happy seeing your work on the screen of a cell phone? And when you think of your own work, your mother and father's famous work as well on the big silver screen. I mean, what's it like for you personally to think of it going into someone's little handheld mobile?
For me, the what is interesting is storytelling. So if the storytelling takes the form of a book or a television program or a cellular phone context or electronics, it's okay. Storytelling is at the base, and that's what I like.
Let's go to Nicole in Charleston, South Carolina. Nicole, you're on the air with Isabella Rossellini.
Thank you very much. Isabella?
Hi.
Wonderful to speak with you. I am elated to speak with you. I think you're fascinating, both as an actor and as a woman, and I commend you for doing this series.
Thank you.
My favorite shows had always been nature shows, and to tackle such an unusual and interesting subject is just amazing. And I just wanted to let you know that I think you're fantastic, and I don't have any questions for you per se, but I just wanted to make sure that you knew that a lot of us out here are think you do a great job.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your support.
Nicole, I couldn't agree more. They're 2 minutes long, and yet there's something really impressive about what's happening here, as surreal as it is. Let's get another. Suzanne in Morristown, New York, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious about why porno in the title?
Yes. The porno, the Sundance Channel was doing, who commissioned the first films, was doing a series of television programming and internet programming called Green. So they had greenhouses, how to make your house more green, more ecologically responsible, how to eat green, organic food, etc. So Green, I thought it was, I had to stay in the title to marry with the intention of Sundance. And so I couldn't call it Green Sex. I mean, we tried, you know, different things. And then Green Porno just seems the funniest. And it worked as bait, frankly. You know, it's a title that is a little bit startling, and so people come to look at it. And that's what a title has to be. It's bait.
There's a showbiz pro talking. Absolutely. You get your attention. Joe, Marlborough, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Isabella Rossellini.
Hello, Isabella, and hello, Tom.
Hello.
Just thinking about what Carlos said a little while ago about the sneaky dwarf beetle and how it draws parallels to us sneaky guys out here. You know, that you don't always have to be the biggest and the strongest and the most modern.
A lot of men feel very relieved about the story of the sneaky males.
Yeah, you know, you look at guys like Woody Allen, you look at guys that play the guitar, guys that grow the ponytails, they sneak up to the women to get nice and close. The women think they're, you know, maybe a little bit more, you know, like them, a little more feminine, and boom, you know. And also, quick question, how do birds do it? I've often wondered.
Well, birds, they have very variety. Most of birds, they don't have genitals. They have an opening called cloaca, and a lot of birds, they just put this cloaca, this hole together, and they exchange sperms and eggs. But the strangest animal that we all know, the duck, has a penis and is a corkscrew shape. Mm-hmm. And the duck, they attack the female in group. They sort of gang rape a female. The female has evolved, because the female still wants to choose the male. So she has evolved an incredible vagina with a lot of folds and dead end. Mm. So she can open and close some of these dead end. And if she is raped by the male she doesn't want to father, she divert her penis, his penis, to a place where the sperm will not reach her eggs. If she's raped by the male she wants to be the father of her babies, then she would let him in the fold that would lead her to her the sperm to her ovaries. Isn't that interesting?
It's totally fascinating, and I don't know who could take us through it with quite the same elan that you do. It's just terrific. We've got a question. I'm kind of on this front of the ducks and their ways, maybe, and others as well. Danielle, Charleston, South Carolina again. Hi, Danielle.
Hello, Tom. Hello.
Hi.
Isabella.
Hi.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to pose a question. I just want to say I'm a huge fan, a huge fan. I'm a fan of the insect world, just on a personal level. I'm a gardener here, and I think insects are our friends. But I'm fascinated by the brutal side of the insect world that you're films brought out, and I was just curious to ask your feeling about that and how it might relate to us as human animals and our sexual practices.
Well, you know, there is a very big controversy you know, if you take most of the people, even the most religious people, now believe that evolution exists and that animals, you know, if you believe in God, were created by God, we connect mechanism of evolution. So God didn't create the animal as it's written in the Genesis in 6 days, all the different species, but God created the species, but also created a mechanism for them to change and vary and evolve. But now religious people believe that man has not been part of evolution, that it has been created in the image of God and is not part of the human world, of the animal world. Now, the Darwinian believe that man instead is connected to animals, and so there is a continuum between animal and us. And this is a point of great controversy. So when you ask me what is it that we would learn from the sexuality of animals, you are a Darwinian, believing that there is indeed a continuity. But, you know, there is great, great mysteries out there. So it's very difficult for me to draw, to tell you, oh, that bee does that, so go ahead and have that affair.
Right. But you know, I've read, I mean, you're a fully grown-up woman. You've got a full life that you know. So you know these things from all sides here. Now that you're looking so closely into insects and, you know, sea creatures and all the rest, I mean, what comparisons do you make with human sexuality and animal? Does it feel like a continuum to you when you're looking at all this, or like a different universe?
Occasionally, you know, but is it that I'm anthropomorphized? I forgot that word.
Yes.
A bit difficult word in science. That
anthropomorphizing.
We tend to use, yes, anthropomorphizing. Well, anthropomorphizing I have done in my film because I say, mm-hmm. if yes. I were a bee, mm-hmm. and then I imagine, which is, I think, is the way I read. I mean, the idea mm-hmm. came about when I read the scientific books and they say, you know, this animal eats with his mouth that opens in this direction and that direction. I'll just say, okay, I don't understand it. So my mouth open, you know, with the cut horizontal. So instead, this animal has a vertical cut and an horizontal cut, and so it would have four lips. And so this way, it's the way I imagine it, and in my head it becomes clearer. So Green Porno was the using my body to understand how it works. Now,
but which is more, let's say, take the brutality question. Which is more brutal, human sexuality, animal sexuality?
But, you know, I wouldn't know what to answer, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm not a scientist. I don't think that any scientist can answer that question. Mm-hmm. It's too much of a leap mm-hmm. to just take. We all know that, you know, there is a struggle to survival and individual compete not only with different species, but compete within the same species. But to me, to say human are more brutal than a bee or than, I don't know. You know,
even more esoteric.
I do know that
we're
winning.
Yeah.
I do know that out there we are 6 billion, and there is, I don't know that there is a species, a mammal, that is 6 billion out there. You know, the other day I was reading
certainly not on our scale.
The elephant should be taken out the list of the endangered species because there are more than 10,000 of them. And I'll just say, wait a second, 10,000, that's not even a stadium full of animals, and it's not considered an endangered species. So I do know that we, human, are reproduced in a way that is faster than any other animal. I mean, an animal that has 10,000 species, 10,000 is nothing. I go in a theater on Broadway, and it's 7,000 people in that theater.
Isabella Rossellini, you take us places we seldom go. Blue Velvet and right on through Green Porno. We're delighted to have you with us today. Please stand by. We'll be right back. Here's Love Me Tender, Nicolas Cage from Wild at Heart, the 1990 film by David Lynch. Isabella Rossellini, right in the middle of it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
To your heart, for it's there that I belong and will never part.
In the new season of Green Porno, Isabella and biologist Claudio Campagna try something a little different. They travel down to a beach in Argentina, in Patagonia, to see a group, a harem, actually, of elephant seals right before they're ready to mate. Here's Isabella playing an antsy bull elephant seal trying to get over the beach.
I can dive 4,000 feet underwater, and I can slow down my heartbeat and hold my breath for 2 hours. Oh, oh, I have to go back. I have to go back to the harem on the beach.
Isabella, on the beach, has a bull elephant seal. Jay in Boston, you're on the air.
Bonjour and hello, Tom.
Hello.
I am struck by the irony somewhat of the fact that this is being produced in America, but that it's really a French, I don't know if you consider yourself a French or Italian, but it's very much a French attitude to sex. That it wouldn't occur here, I don't think, quite as readily with an American actor. And I'm very impressed, the sort of sense of fun about sex and the sort of impishness and non-prudery, and that is terrific.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I also wanted to say to you, madame, that I have gone on a... I was very upset that Lancome no longer has you as their spokesperson, and that I don't buy their products as a result.
Oh. Take that, Lancome.
Do you know Lancome now is using my daughter as their spokesperson?
Okay. Oh, that's great.
That's okay, then. I'll start buying them again.
Oh, Jay, thank you.
Thank you very much for all your work.
Thank you, Jay. Isabella, shall we thank your European parentage for the concept of these films?
Yes, maybe. I don't know. I don't know that they're not. I think they are discreet. You know, I don't think that they are porno.
The humor, there. The impishness, the kind of openness. I mean, Americans don't just naturally and readily do what you're doing here, I would say.
Well, on the other hand, it is produced by Robert Redford.
Yes.
And he really represents the best America, Hollywood, you know. So it's a cooperation between me and my background, but his too.
Let me ask you, Jay raises in a roundabout way age when it comes to Lancome. They famously sort of cut you loose after many years of being the face of Lancome Cosmetics. I think when you turned 40 or so.
Yes.
That's, some years back now. And I'm struck in these films at how at ease you seem to be in your beauty, nevertheless, also in your age. You're not pulling any punches on it. You're just right there. Here's what I am.
Exactly. I mean, there isn't really much you could do, you know.
But a lot of people do a lot. I mean, we see nip and tuck injection and all the rest. Yeah. Not in these films.
Sometimes, you know, I'd look at plastic surgery like, oh, well, you know, it's a new technology, why not use it? And sometimes I look at it and saying, is this a new way of oppressing women, as, you know, we had in the past corsets, or as we had in China, women feet binding. Mm-hmm. Is there something that actually it's based on misogyny, so that women constantly have to feel bad about themselves because the root of it is misogyny? It's something tells me that feeling bad about your aging or feeling bad, we all feel bad about our weight, or it has a lot to do with misogyny. And so I resist falling for it. But I also feel not particularly bad about growing old. So I'm not condemning people that have plastic surgery, but I'm just saying that as long as I look at myself in the mirror, I mean, I don't find myself extraordinary and beautiful, but I don't find myself a monster either. I'll just go on with my life.
I have to say, I mean, your beauty remains, but I was very sort of buoyed up by your ease with age. I wonder if some of that comes from the independence. I mean, you've had plenty of relationships, but at this point, I read, you haven't been married for more than 20 years. You've got a kind of independence from that immediate male audience, judge, partner. No?
I'm not sure that in order not to have plastic surgery, you don't have to have a husband. I don't know that there is a direct correlation with that. I think... No, I really think that, you know, one ages and obviously one loses that look of young, but there is something else that comes with age, mm-hmm. which is a great freedom. You know, I mean, when I was younger, I had to prove myself that I could work and be financially independent. Mm-hmm. I had to prove myself that I was an actress. I had to raise my family and prove myself as capable of having children and having mm-hmm. a career. As you grow older, all of a sudden, you feel like you've proven yourself or mm-hmm. what you had to prove to yourself. Mm-hmm. And you really concentrate on what you like. And I see this as a common trend among a lot of women my age, you know, and I'm close to 60, mm-hmm. And men. So there is a great freedom we come with age, and that is never emphasized. You know, what you read in the press is always, oh, well, you know, mm-hmm. the wrinkles and, you know, you live with it.
You fly your flag very beautifully. Alice in Buffalo, New York, you're on the air with Isabella Rossellini.
Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. I don't know Isabel, but I remember her mother and father and the excitement they created.
Ingrid Bergman and Roberto Rossellini, and of course their famous relationship, which scandalized the United States anyway in the 1950s.
And I'm glad Isabel turned out so well.
Yes, but, the fruit.
What I want to say is, isn't this a good introduction to sex education, and could it be used in that way?
My son showed the films to his science teacher, and the science teacher loved it and took it and showed them to the class with the permission of the school. And it became quite popular. So now other schools have adopted it, at least for high school students. So I'm delighted. You know, I wasn't really thinking about that, but I'm delighted that they could be used for education.
What do you think your mother would think of this sort of, I don't know, arc of your career in a project like this? I mean, you really do look so like her, and but she was independent-minded in her own way. Could you imagine her on a green porno project, Ingrid Bergman?
I don't know. You know, both my parents died a long mm-hmm. time ago, mm-hmm. but obviously, as you have said, they both taught me to be independent and to be mm-hmm. thorough in the work that I do and serious. But that doesn't mean that you can't laugh, you know, that the films are comical. So I think they would be very pleased about the evolution of my career.
Oh, that's great. Steve in New Britain, Connecticut, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, thank you. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Okay, hello, Isabel.
Hello.
Hello, and Tom, thank you so much for your informative material to the public. As a matter of fact, I really need to renew my subscription.
Yes, absolutely. You must.
I have always been known as a nature boy since I'm from El Paso, Texas, originally. But I have raised and bred poultry, tropical fish, saltwater, specifically Egyptian mouth breeder fish, and the seahorse, and I've raised some ants. So I'm really very much in tune to this this program today. My question to you, Isabel, is being with the human species, do insects, and maybe just with the animal kingdom specifically, do you feel, is there any supportive material, scientific material, that supports the fact that do these animals or insects enjoy sex as much as we do?
Great question, Steve. Thank you, Isabella.
They don't know, but I did read in a book when I did the snails, and the snails they are hermaphroditic, so they are they have both sexes. The individual is both male and female, and when they mate, they first go through. They can build a sort of a dart, and they dart each other's flesh, and they have put little monitors, and they see that there is a change when they put these darts. So that maybe that means that there is a foreplay to sex to arouse.
Dart me.
Yes. So we don't know. I mean, I would like very much to be an animal for one day, just not only to see if sex feels the same, but, you know, do they think? Do they understand? And do they have a mind? Do they make choices? Do they feel bad? Or do they have you know, it would be fantastic to be an animal for a day. I mean, we live with them, closest one to dogs. Everybody have a dog. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. yet we don't even know if they think. We do think we think, but we don't know exactly what
We certainly know that they're compelled to sex, but there may still be some mystery there. Let me get a call here from Cape Coral, Florida. Cape Coral, Florida. And Gary. Gary, you're on the air.
Isabella.
Hi, Gary.
To be speaking to you. There's a problem with the bee population around the world, and I was wondering if your research has done anything to enlighten anybody on how we can turn that around. I guess we both know that the bees are very important to just about every species on Earth.
Yes.
I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, first of all, I am a filmmaker. I'm not a scientist. If I knew the problem of how to solve the bee population crashing, it would be fantastic. I would have a Nobel Prize. Yes, I did follow it, and I think that some of it is now believed to be a fungus, and that they are trying to create a medicine so that it can take care of the crash. If the bees disappear from the world, it would be an incredible loss, because bees are pollinators. So we not only would lose bees and honey, but we would lose plants, flowers. So it would be a very big catastrophe for us.
Isabella Rossellini with some sex and some environmentalism. Gary, thanks for your call in Cape Coral. Isabella, here's a funny Twitter comment. This is from Diane in Pocatello, Idaho, where apparently they're listening in her office. And her Twitter is, she's best quote from my office on this topic, get your environmentalism out of my porno. she wants her porn straight, but you're bringing environmentalism a little more explicitly in this third season. I've got a clip here of your pal Claudio Campagna, the Italian biologist, talking about environmental effects of eating anchovies, seafood.
Ask biologist Claudio Campagna.
It's not really bad to consume anchovies in pizza. But what happens with the anchovy fishery is that many, many boats target these schools, and nets are thrown over them, and basically everything is being taken, leaving very little for other animals.
Claudio Campagna, biologist on the beach, and really driving the environmental point home this season, Isabella.
Yes, I mean, Gary, we talked about the bees, and mm-hmm. he wanted to have from me or from my film a more explicit environmental message or information. So that has been one of the demands that has been. So the new series, the latest series that was done in collaboration with biologist Claudio Campagna, had a more explicit environmental message. Now, I think as a filmmaker, so to me, the ability to continuing changing the experiment on film so that there was an evolution within green porno, so that the first green porno were always starring with, if I were, then me transforming into the animal and then show how it mate. And then the latest one instead is when the films end, there is a little environmental message attached to it. And also we blend documentary images with my puppet shows and my costumes. So that was also visually an experiment. And I think it worked quite well. So I would like to pursue that. You know, not so much. I don't want to preach. I see myself as an entertainer. So I'm not going to preach on the environment and what people should do. But I do like to make comical film, but comical film on informed subjects.
Let us get one last call. Sherry in Bristol, Connecticut. You're on the air with Isabella Rossellini.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And hi, Isabella.
Hi.
I just had one quick question for you about, did you see David Lynch's comments about movies on the iPhone?
Yes.
David Lynch, you're what, a longtime lover years back, a director in Blue Velvet, and I guess he's not for a small screen movie, not so thrilled
about
it.
I don't know, because he used a curse word and it was funny. I think that what it meant is if you photograph a film and you think that film is going to be shown on a very big screen, it has to be seen on a very big screen, because if you look at Apocalypse Now on your cellular phone, you're not seeing the film, or if you look at Lawrence of Arabia. But if you know to begin with that your screen is going to be a different canvas, is going to be little, you can address aesthetically that problem. So I don't think David would have a problem with that. I think it was a comment about him imagining his films to be feature film in a big theater, and he paid great attention to create, a photographic power. His film looked very different from any other film. So he pays a lot of attention at the look of the film. And then if you collapse that a screen into a very little screen, you also collapse his aesthetic and his work. And I think he was referring to that. But if you give him an assignment that he has to develop the film for a very small screen, thinking of that as a new canvas, I'm sure David Lynch will do something extraordinary.
A lot of the animals in your green porno shorts have their loves and move on. What about you and the men in your life, Isabella? Do you stay in touch with David Lynch, with the others who have been important to you?
Some of them, you know, some I stay in touch more than others, whether my husbands or lovers. I am in touch with David, not that much, but occasionally we send each other an email or we might see each other once a year. I live in New York, we're closer to New York, mm-hmm. and he lives in California. So the distance also, if we lived in the same city, probably we were seeing each other more often. Mm.
Isabella Rossellini, you remain remarkable, and we're very grateful to you for your work and for your time today. It's been fascinating talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For
thank
us.
You so much, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful to have you. Isabella Rossellini, actress, model, filmmaker, author, screenwriter. She produces and stars in Green Porno. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. We'll go out with the Piano Sonata No. 8 in C minor, Pathétique by Beethoven, from the 1994 film with Isabella Rossellini, Immortal Beloved. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point. Thank you.